My name's Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody up and about. So, good morning. Okay, it's time for step 10. So we just, last night, we kind of finished up with step 9, and we did some questions and answers. So we're going to move on. And the big book on page 84, I love to read step 10 because I feel like it just says everything. It's just so, to me, so clear, step 10 is. This brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And one of the things that I do is I love this step because what happens is it keeps me current. And I try to do a step 10 every night. And I don't always write it. I will write it if I'm having a little anxiety, because if I'm having a little anxiety, there's probably something going on. And for me, if I've got that kind of stuff going on, I probably owe an amends, is usually what my little barometer says. But I do a step 10 every night. And we vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. And which is why one of the reasons that I have only done, and this is just me, because if your sponsor says for you to do an inventory every year, that's the right way to do it. That is absolutely the right way to do it. Or if they tell you to do it every 5 years, however you do it, that's the perfect way. That's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, and the way Bob put it last night, he said, I've had three kind of different schools of learning in AA, and there's really a lot. I mean, there's groups that are just so into the book. If it's not in the book, they don't do it, and it's really, really intense and very, very structured, and they don't deviate in any way, and they don't do anything but the book. And you know, and I tend to do other things. I tend to read other books and do some other stuff spiritually, but that's not, you know, so there's all kinds of ways. Bob was talking about how he's done, you know, the book and how he's done service and how he's done action. And with me, I've done pretty much the same thing, except I haven't been that involved with a sponsor who was way into the service structure. So consequently, I haven't ever really been into the service structure. And one of the things I want to say about that is I think everybody finds their niche in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I go, I was a GSR once. And I went to a GSR meeting, and I couldn't deal with it. I just can't deal with it. My husband and my son love it. They just absolutely love it. Dave would not miss an area assembly. He just would not miss it. And I just go crazy when people stand up at those microphones for 2 hours till 12 o'clock at night. It just makes me crazy, but it's not my thing. So, but the people who are into service, it is fabulous. So one of the things, a lot of you are new, is that you see people doing different things in AA, and I believe that we find our niche. And one of the things that, when it comes to step 10, I was involved with a sponsor, and my sponsor, Dottie, is way into step 10. And some people even have a little form that they fill out every night. I've seen those around Alcoholics Anonymous. I personally don't do that. I just answer the questions. So this way, I have only done, because of the way I was sponsored, I've done three inventories in my sobriety. So if you want to, you could say that's one every 10 years. And that have been, you know, pretty in-depth. But for the most part, I do a daily inventory. And I talk, now that I'm not working, I talk to Dottie a lot. But about the 10th step. But also, let me just say, this is probably maybe not a good idea, but if it doesn't concern my husband, I'll tell him what's going on. So I just want to be sure to share it with somebody, because one of the things that I don't think is good for me is I can't keep secrets. I can't. I have this kind of thing. I say I live my life out loud. There's not anything about me that I try to hide. Absolutely nothing. And my husband says it better than he, the way he says it is, I live my life so I can't do anything you can't watch. You probably don't want to watch it, but, you know, I can't do anything you can't watch. And if I live like that, then I don't have to worry about what I said, where I said it, how I did it, what, you know, secret I'm keeping. And the only thing that I'm really very, very, that I'm really a stickler on is I do not like to hear gossip. I don't want to hear, you know, stuff coming back to, you know, I don't tell people's four step, I don't tell, or fifth step, I don't do any of that stuff. So I just make sure that I keep my mouth shut on that. But when it's my personal stuff, you know, you're free to know it. Okay. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So, like I said, I've cleaned up the past, so now I'm going to do it on a daily basis. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. And I believe that with all my heart. What we learn here continues for a lifetime. I have learned a ton this weekend. This is the first time I've done this with Bob. I've listened to his tapes, but this is the first time I've learned so much from him this weekend. I love what he said. You know, some fairy came in the middle of the night and put that in the big book. I mean, I still have those experiences, those aha moments. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately. And I think that's the big word right there, immediately. And that's why I said a lot of times if it doesn't have anything to do, if it's not about my husband, he's there 24/7 now. So I'll just grab him, and if not, I usually talk to Dottie once or twice a week, so I'll grab her. Or I might even tell a sponsee. I'm pretty good about sharing my stuff with sponsees. I'm one of those alcoholics that do not believe that I am above my sponsees. I totally believe what the big book says and that we walk shoulder to shoulder. and make amends quickly. And that doesn't mean, to me, that doesn't mean 2 or 3 days later, if I see that I need to make an amend, I immediately try to do it that day. If we have harmed anyone, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recall from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. I can't remember, Bob will know this, but it's either in the book or in the 12 and 12. Sometimes I get them, the two of them mixed up. There's a little statement that says, repetition strengthens and confirms, and faith then comes naturally. And that's what I like about this. It will just happen automatically. If we do this every single day, then we automatically make amends immediately, talk to somebody right away and make amends immediately. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor had been given us without any thought or effort on our part. And that's what I feel like. I feel like here I was on one side, and I couldn't stop drinking no matter what. And then all of a sudden, I'm just no thought of it, can be around it. I just feel like I just stand in that place of grace that just, you know, I'm protected. I'm absolutely protected from alcohol. And it's not that I'm not around it. I mean, I have women that I sponsor who are waitresses. I have quite a few women. I've got 4 women I sponsor who are flight attendants, and they have to give, you know, they're serving booze all the time. and they are not affected by doing that, even though that's their job and they're handling it, smelling it, all of that stuff. So it's just like it's just been lifted from us. No effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it, and it is a miracle. When you lay down and on a sofa like I did and can't get up, and you've got these little kids that need your attention and you can't do it, and it's not that I don't love them, I just can't do it. And here, I mean, it's just gone. It's just the miracle of being relieved of that. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit. There's that word again that Bob pointed out to you before. That we keep in fit spiritual condition. That means we have to do this work. And in my opinion, and I think that it's consistent with most of the people in AA, I believe that step 10 is 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, all rolled up into one, so that I can do those steps on a daily basis. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not even exist for us. Let's see, I've already read that. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. And this is what I have to really be careful of, is that I don't, I don't get to move. And today, when we get down to step 11, because it just kind of rolls into step 11 too, but I am not, sometimes I have to watch myself today because I'm retired. And I used to be on this very rigid schedule because I worked. And so I was always doing everything so rigid. And now that I'm retired, I once in a while I can catch myself resting on my laurels, I get busy doing something else. I love what Bob said about, he gives himself 2 hours every day. And when we get into step 11, I'll talk about that, because that's my husband. And he does the same thing. He reads the Tao, and he reads the various kinds of religions by William James.
Varieties of Religion.
The William James book. He reads all that stuff. I'm really of the mentality I need to stick with the big book. That seems to resonate with me better. But what happens is that I'll forget and not do these things like I used to do them very, very consistently. I used to go to bed pretty on a normal time and get up on a normal time, even though sometimes I had to talk at an AA meeting somewhere in Southern California. But I was very rigid about how I did my life because it was so structured. Today, I may watch a TV show, and we may watch a movie till 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm not on that kind of schedule anymore, so I have to be very, very careful, because what used to discipline me because I was working, now I'm required to kind of do some self-discipline. And I'm a structured person, which is, I think, why I came from the military and then I came into AA. Really wasn't a far jump at all. It was pretty much the same. And into that kind of community to follow a set of rules. I'm kind of one that always sort of obeyed the rules. I'm kind of a goody-two-shoes who just drank so much and terrified her children and all that kind of stuff. We are headed for trouble. If we rest on our laurels, we are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. And I want to just kind of talk about that, especially for the new people. The disease of alcoholism continues to, it is continuing to get worse and worse in my body the longer I have it. Which is why I drank for 18 years. I have seen people drink at 30 years of sobriety and be dead in a week, because the disease of alcoholism continues to progress in my body. And what happens is that I'm not, it's not going to take me 18 years to get to the place I did to get here. It's going to happen really fast. You know the story in the big book that talks about the man who, you know, stopped drinking, and for 25 years he worked hard, and then he retired, and he was dead in a week because he started drinking. And that's because the disease of alcoholism continues to progress in our bodies for as long, even though we're not drinking. Doesn't matter whether we're, that's the difference in alcoholism and just people who can stop drinking. The disease continues to progress in the body. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And I'd like to point out the word maintenance. And the way I like to think about maintenance is that it's just like how I take care of my car. You know, I make sure that I take it in for regular oil changes. I have to maintain my spiritual condition. And what I get is a daily reprieve. And when I got sober in Texas, man, we had some old rednecks that used to sit on the back wall with the chair leaned back, you know, on two legs and their arms folded. And, you know, that's all they talked about, that you cannot live today's sobriety on yesterday's recovery. You've got to do it today. I get a daily reprieve. So I have to do the same things every day. That I have to do today what I did yesterday. And I have to maintain my spiritual condition. And I read a few books in the morning and do the things that I do, and we'll talk about that in step 11. But I have to maintain my spiritual condition. I can't just, you know, I don't know about people who go weeks without meetings. I don't know anything about that. When I found out how many meetings Bob made a week, I almost fell off the chair because he does like a lot. What, eight or nine a week? I do four. Three that are like consistent meetings, but usually four. And I thought, gosh, I'm really doing good. I'm 31 years sober. I'm doing four meetings a week. I feel I'm way outnumbered here. But I feel like I have to continue to do that. I am always in a book study and a step study, always. Dave and I have a 1 o'clock step study in Bellingham, and we are always there. And it's also a tradition meeting. We take a tradition and a step a month, and we do the step out of the book, we do the step out of the 12 and 12, and then we do the tradition out of the book, and then we have the last Wednesday of the month, it is a discussion on that step, and we stay to the subject. So it's a really structured meeting, and we stay with the big book and the 12 and 12. So I always try to stay in a step study, and that keeps me, that keeps the maintenance of my spiritual condition, because I don't know, I think Bob said it great when he talked about women who have childbirth. You think about how terrible that is, and then we turn around and do it again, you know, and we forgot about that. And I think that that's what happens, is we forget. I need to be ever reminded what it was like. I have to stay here so I'm ever reminded. And I tell you, I watch people go in and out in this program, and I haven't watched one person go out and it turn out to be a good thing. So, I mean, it's just, if they're an alcoholic of my type, I have seen people come into Alcoholics Anonymous and go back out and find other things, you know, church and whatever, and don't drink again, but don't go to AA. And all I can say is maybe they're just not an alcoholic of my type. They just might not be. I can't not always be in this work. Some people can. I've seen some people, and you know, that don't seem to have to work as hard as I do. And I don't know what that's about. But I have a friend named Carl M. And I was in. He's from Southern California. And I was in Odessa with him not too long ago, and I had a sponsee with me. And he hadn't met her before, and he said, You know something, Polly has a reputation that she sponsors either the most gorgeous women and active women in Alcoholics Anonymous, or she sponsors the sickest. And he looked at her and he said, "And which one are you?" And but that's what, you know, that's what I have to do. I get these women who are so sick. And it's like, I mean, I have to stay on board. I have to stay on board because I'll tell you, they get way ahead of me if I don't. And I have to maintain my spiritual condition because if I don't, if I pick up my cell phone and I see their number, I'm like, "Oh, I don't know if I can do this." But as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition, then I know that it's not about me, and I am just the messenger. I'm not the message, and all I have to do is just stay focused on the material. And if I can do that, if I can, because I tell you, I sponsor a lot of wackadoos, and so I have to make sure that I come right back to the material and keep it in a really good structure. Because if I don't, they'll get me way off into the weeds, into something I mean, you know, they can just pull me right out of what's going on, and pretty soon I'm as a wackadoo as they are. So if you're sponsoring people like that, just go back to the literature. Just keep going back to the literature and stay in the structure of the literature. And I use a lot of the literature because I love a lot of the books. I'm a really big fan of AA Comes of Age. I'm a huge fan of Pass It On, Dr. Bob and the Old Timers. And I'm a huge, huge fan of Language of the Heart. I use Language of the Heart for the traditions. I think that Language of the Heart talks about emotional sobriety. And also, when we get to Step 11, I'm going to talk about Bill writes in the Language of the Heart about Step 11. So these are the materials, and I use all those materials. And I try to read those. Somewhere during the week, I'm in one of those books all the time, just because I love it. I love AA Comes of Age because I love our history. So, okay, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How best can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. I have a beautiful AA sponsor. And what Dottie says to me, and this is what she says to me, and this is what I do, but you don't have to do it. But she goes to that line there about how I can best serve thee. And Dottie says, for me every day to pray for a servant's heart. And if I pray for a servant's heart, then what happens is God gives me the willingness to want to serve. And I've been doing that for over 25 years. It's just part of my prayer is to pray for a servant's heart. And because I am a selfish, self-centered person. And if I don't pray to serve, I will get off in my own thing. I'd love to tell you that I don't do that anymore, but I do. And I'm better than I've ever been before. And I'm more focused on the people I sponsor. And I love being retired. I love it because now I can spend more time with the women I sponsor. I don't have to make quick conversations either on my cell phone on the way to work or, you know, on the way home or try to catch them. I used to take calls starting at 5 o'clock in the morning because that's when I had to do it. But I just love that I now can spend more time with the women I sponsor and, you know, have nice conversations, really get to know them. And that's special. That's really special. Plus, when I travel, a lot of times one of the women I sponsor will travel with me, like Sylvia's traveled with me. Sylvia and I have done some really fun ones, though. So it's we've done some fun stuff together. There are thoughts which go through us. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. Now, I used to do a lot more praying during all during the day when I was working. I had a job where I worked for a healthcare company, and there is nothing more crazy than to work with a bunch of therapists. I mean, it's just all that psychobabble of just, you know, some days I just couldn't hardly stand it. But I would have to pray constantly because it just would make me nuts that everything is analyzed. I just want to say, go in the bathroom, get on your knees, ask God to take it and go back and sit down at your desk, because it would just, you know, it just seemed like too much head trip for me. But I worked with a lot of those people, and so I had to have that all the time. It's just, you know, let me be an example. Let me be, you know, give me a servant's heart. Help, love and tolerance, love and tolerance. I'd pray for patience, pray for patience. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Now, I'm not quite sure what that is about the willpower, but what I do for me is I just bring my thoughts back to God. Whenever I start judging these people and getting irritated and agitated, and I can get really agitated with that kind of stuff. It just makes me nuts. And because I just think it's too much psychobabble, and where is God in this? And I, you know, I can just get real judgmental. I can just start spinning out, and pretty soon I can't work because I'm so busy focused on these people who make me crazy. So I would just constantly, you know, have to pray. And I could not just go off in a cubicle by myself. I was in, you know, it was a job that I had to be involved with these people. So I was using this constantly. And I had a little sticky on my computer, and it said, love and tolerance is our code. Patience with my coworkers. Because if I didn't, sometimes I judge them too much. And what happens, we've already talked about that. The more I judge you, the worse I feel. You know, you don't even know I'm judging you, so it's not affecting you. And I'm sitting here just eating alive, and you're just going on about your business, and your day's fine. And I'm sitting here all churned up and knotted up and, you know, and all a mess and can't even think straight. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. Those are fabulous promises. We have carefully followed directions. We have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. And some of the things that I do is pause. You know, it talks in the book about us to just pause. And that's why I'd have little sticky notes. I use things to help me to get back into that God-centeredness. Take a deep breath. Visualize something, you know, really calming so that I can be in the day. That I can be in the day. And have that flow of His Spirit into us. Because that feels so much better than all that yucky stuff I can get going on in my head. The other, to some extent, we have become God conscious. And one of the things that Dottie says is every time I mention God, it's a conscious contact. So what I try to do is I try to say that a lot. Because that keeps me remembering who's in charge, remembering that it's not me. And because I love the way Bob said it, is keeping the stuff cleaned up between me and God. I'm going to steal that from him. I love that. I love that. Keep all that stuff that builds up out of the way between me and God. And I can do that on a daily basis. And then I don't have these horrendous big inventories to do, because what I've done is I've just swept it out on a daily basis, just kept it swept out on a daily basis, and don't allow things to build up. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. I just love that. Things like that intuitiveness. You know, that sometimes you just get this strong feeling, and gosh, just that's, I truly believe that's God talking. That feeling of what to do is just God talking, and that's better than any high I've ever had. That just feels so good. It feels at peace. I'm not alone. It's comforting. I am so grateful that I know today that I don't ever have to do anything alone. That I've got God, I've got you guys. I mean, we have each other. It's fabulous. It's to know that you never ever have to do anything alone. But we must go further, and that means more action. So, okay, Bob.
Thank you, Polly. I'm Bob Darrell, and I'm an alcoholic. Good morning. There are a lot of ways to do step 10 and 11. There's actually a lot of ways to do a lot of the steps. And what seems to happen to a lot of us is that we try a lot of different things, and we end up kind of back at the book. And it's just, and you put it, this process up against all the other stuff, and this is the thing that seems to give me the best, most balanced spirit. On page 84, it starts this process on step 10, and the first paragraph uses the word continue four times. Like, it's almost like, okay, stop. I get it. You know, just continue to watch, continue. I think I suspected when I was new that step 10 read, continue to take personal inventory, and if someday, I know it's hard to believe, but if I was wrong, and it says when, which means get ready. Yeah. You're going to be wrong a lot. If you're new and you can't stand being wrong, you're going to have a hard time in recovery. A hard time. Unless you... I run into people every once in a while. They say things weird to me. And I understand why they're saying it. I've even done a little bit of this in my first couple of years. They'll say things like, well, now I'm in AA and work the steps. I'm no longer ever angry or afraid or self-centered. And I always want to look for the lobotomy scars. You know, how to do that? So why do we do this? Well, religious people, you know, talk. One of the things that churches and a lot of religions talk about, and I think they miss the point. And they're big on sin, and we use different words. We talk kind of about the same thing. It's separation from God, separation from other people. We don't call it sin because some of us came from a background where that word just makes the hair on the back of our neck stand up, you know. But it's really the same thing. But most religions will hammer you and with this idea that you're going to be punished for your sins. And yeah, we know that's not true. You're not punished for your sins. You're punished by them. There's a world of difference. It's the whole difference between my relationship with God. It's just cause and effect. God loves me. You know, a guy told me years ago something after a meeting. I was having a struggling with God, and some of my old prejudices and unworthiness, etc. And he said, I want you to try a little exercise. He said, I want you to think of the worst, most despicable, shameful thing you've ever done in your whole life. I had a couple of them. So I got one. I thought of the one thing. And he says, you got that? He says, I don't want to know what it is. Just you got it in your mind. I said, yeah. He said, now I want you to think of the kindest, most loving, most spiritual thing you've ever done in your whole life. And I remembered a thing I did. It was funny. It was when I was a little kid, I had a paper route, and there was a guy on my route that was an old man living barely on Social Security, and I just liked him. I just loved him, I guess. And I took some money out of my paper route and did something nice for him. It's probably the only altruistic thing I ever did prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, but it really stuck out in my mind because it lit me up. It made me feel really good doing that. And then this man, he says to me, he says, "So, you got the worst thing?" "Yeah." "You got the best thing?" "Yeah." He says, "When you understand that God loved you equally when you were performing the worst as he did when you were doing the best, you will start to understand God's love." And 29 years later, I suppose, from when Manny told me that, I'm here to report that in my experience, and I don't know that this is a fact, but in my observation and experience, I believe that Manny was wrong. I believe God loved me more when I did the worst thing. And I'll tell you why. Because I've watched God's love over the years work through the people in AA. And how much it's poured on where it's needed. How much it's poured on despair. How much it's poured on people who are broken and remorseful and hate themselves. How much it's poured through the people in AA. God's love works through us. It's like apply where needed. And it was needed there. Just there was I couldn't receive it. That's the problem. I love this line. We've entered the world of the spirit, and I think that a lot of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, we enter the world of the spirit, but we're so diverted by the clamors. Bill uses a term in the book I love: worldly clamors. You know, the rent, taxes, traffic. Him, her, them, worldly clamors that I'm not awake to it a lot of times. When you enter the world of the spirit, something happens to you in here. There's more unity between you, maybe not even consciously between you and God, but between life. What surrendered people, or at least if you're close to it and you're in that zip code and you're trying to live that way of life, things click for you. Life works. Life works. Because you're not at conflict with life, trying to arrange life to suit yourself. And the problem is I fall in and out of that. That's why step 10 is so important to me in step 11. I have natural, unremovable default positions. One of them is self. One of them is being the center of the universe. One of them is being the guy who knows everything. One of them is the guy, the judgmental guy who's picking everybody apart. And I'm not really judgmental. I just see how stupid you are. You know, it's, right, you know, you become that guy, right? And those are default positions. And unless I bring and continue to bring grace in my life, that's just where I go. It's not because I'm a bad guy. It's just what it is to have a chronic spiritual malady. A chronic. I never get over this. Never. And so this is very important stuff for me to continue to watch for these things in myself. All these, and they're all manifestations of self, selfishness, dishonesty. I've lied a lot in my life, but I've never lied because I'm a liar. I lie because I'm afraid. And the 12x12, Bill says that the chief activator of all my defects of character is self-centered fear. It's always back to the default position of self and self being afraid self's not going to get what self's got to have. It's always me and my way, me and my stuff, me and me and me and me. That's the default position. And right behind that default position is a more serious one, and that's drinking. Drinking or suicide. I mean, when you think about it objectively, if you've ever had suicidal thoughts, could you imagine being more self-centered and more self-obsessed with your feelings and your life and stuff than when you're suicidal? I mean, that's brought on by extreme self. So I must watch for these things. And what happens to me, alcoholism, when it says in the book that says alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, I think that the ego is cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, I had a problem for years with what a lot of Christians talk about when they talk about Satan, Lucifer, the devil. But I'll tell you something. If I think in terms of that as an analogy for my ego, oh my God, it all makes sense. One of the things that they say, and this is so right on the money, that the greatest trick the devil ever did was to convince people he wasn't there. The greatest trick my ego has ever done is to convince me it ain't there. I'm not egotistical. They are assholes. I mean, right? Because it uses my perception against me, and I have to watch for this stuff. I've caught myself in these. I don't catch it until it's painful, but it's like I'm over here. I've applied spiritual principles to my life. I've gotten off the default position of self. I'm over here and I'm other centered and I feel God's presence and my contact with God now is conscious rather than unconscious. I'm lit up. I'm helping others. Man, this is good. And then it's like I got this little thing in my head. I call it the noticer. The noticer comes on, and I just start noticing little things that are wrong. You know, just little things. Just little things that aren't right. And it just starts coming back, and people are a little bit out of line. And my God, look what's happening in the government. And look at, and traffic nowadays, and taxes. And just next thing I know, I'm back here, right? Back here. One of my favorite... it's all good now. As a result of the steps, I've revisited a lot of my childhood religion, and it's funny how it stuff I had a problem with. Now I don't have a problem with it. The Bible makes sense to me now, but I look at it with different eyes than I've ever looked at it before. When I looked at it dogmatically, it made me nuts. Lot's wife got turned into a pillar of salt because of curiosity. If I peek, I'm going to turn. I mean, you know, come on. Right. But if I look at it as stories about spiritual states, it all makes sense to me now. It's right on the money in the light. And Bill says something in his story. He says, from now on, I will test everything against this newfound God consciousness within me. And I can test the Bible against that, man. I'll tell you, it's right on the money. And one of the story I'm getting around to is the one of Adam and Eve. Now, I'm not a biblical scholar, so what I'm about to share is very just experiential against my spiritual awakening. But I started thinking about that story in the Bible, and I started thinking, well, here's Adam and Eve. God gave them heaven on earth. He put them in the Garden of Eden. It was perfect, perfect heaven. He said to them, he made a suggestion. Don't eat the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Kind of like your sponsor says, oh, don't get involved with them. You didn't want to until he said that. And they eat the fruit of the knowledge of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And you know what I think happened? I think they got exactly what the fruit promised. The knowledge, the discernment. The judgment. You know that mechanism in this that plays God rather than go with his flow? And I think what happened is all of a sudden Adam's looking around going, man, this was paradise yesterday. What the heck happened? There's crabgrass, there's flies. Eve's got cellulite. God, what are you thinking? This is crap. And what changed? Nothing. Nothing changed. Except he was in heaven over here, and he came right back over to self again, playing God, being in charge, being the one, the ego, the one who knows. And I have to watch for that. It's my natural tendency. It's not because I'm a bad guy. These promises, the 10-step promise. I wish somewhere along the line we'd stop. I understand why we read the 9-step promises. They're very flowery. You could put them on a Hallmark card in a recovery bookstore, for God's sakes. New freedom, new happiness, not regret the past. But I didn't come here for that. I came here for the 10-step promises. Yeah. To be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It just comes automatically, the book says. We're not even cocky. We're not afraid. It's just been removed. It's almost a definition of grace. It just comes to us. An unmerited thing that we don't even deserve, but what we did is we've cleared up a channel between us and a power source that does for us what we can't do for ourselves. I think that this is why we come to AA. On page 100, it says something, and you know, back on page in chapter 3, if we started Friday night, we talked about the delusion. But here on page 100, the bottom of the page, it talks about really these same promises in a different way. It says, assuming we are spiritually fit. Now, that means that we're continuing to watch for the stuff that gets between me and God, that gets between my ability to carry out my primary purpose. Assumingly, we are spiritually fit. We can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it on our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures that show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles. If we go to their houses, we must not think or be reminded about alcohol at all. That's a great line. Yeah. Tell a newcomer that's in the obsession to drink. Oh, just don't think about it. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. And here's the kicker. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. And there's something wrong, something the matter with his spiritual status. I used to do a meeting. I've done it twice a week for forever in a detox in Las Vegas, where they're dying of alcoholism, and there's chronic relapsers in there. And I used to say something. I had to stop saying it in detox, even though it was true. What I would say to them, if you get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and you make it the center of your life and you devote yourself to helping other alcoholics and work those steps, there will come a time where you could be in a room alone with an unlimited amount of your drug of choice and have the freedom to use it, and no one would know, and it will mean no more to you than the furniture in the room. And they'd look at me like I was from Pluto. They can't imagine that. They can't imagine that. They can't imagine. They've never been free of the hook. And they've tried. Some of them have had 10, 15 rehabs. Some have been to therapy. Some have tried meds. They've tried everything to get free of the hook that eventually, sometimes after years of abstinence, eventually brings them back like a moth to the flame. See, they can't imagine that. And when you think of it objectively, though, for those of us that are able to be comfortable, sober, decade after decade after decade, wouldn't that have to happen? I mean, for God's sakes, if we're fighting the bag and the bottle, how long you think we're going to last? 30 years? 30 days, maybe. 30 weeks is pushing it. It has to be this. These promises don't come true. We're in a lot of trouble because then we're just doing time. We're just doing time, fighting the bag and the bottle. This next paragraph of the middle of the page 85 is. I think I've thought about this paragraph a lot. I've watched some wonderful, wonderful men and women drink again, commit suicide, destroy their lives, all, and it's all as a result. And at one time, a lot of these people had were in the door. They were in the door. They were in the room. They were in the presence of God. They were hooked up. And it says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. You know, it's so easy that we lose a lot of people. And here's what, you know, when you're new and you've just got out of a detox, or you still don't know if your family's going to accept you again, you don't know if you're going to go to jail. You don't know if you have a job. Your emotions are just wacky. Your mind's spinning. You feel horrible. You feel pretty alcoholic. You got a bad case. But how bad of a case of alcoholism do you have with $500,000 in the bank, with a big house, with respect in the community? With you haven't thought about taking a drink for 10 years. When everything in you feels like, and we're such feeling people, feels like there's no problem here. It feels like there's no problem. Everything's going my way. And what happens, I believe, is that I get seduced by the fruits of my own recovery into a false, illusionary state of security that doesn't exist. Having alcoholism, having a chronic illness, is that I will always live in the shadow of alcoholism, always, always. And unless I'm diligent and maintain some sort of flow of power in my life, it's just a matter of time before, you know, that's why we see guys all the time, what happens is that God's grace stops being what's supporting their sobriety. Now it's the family. Now it's the business. Now it's all the other stuff. It's other illusionary powers move in and become the center. I know I've been a victim of that in my sobriety. Thank God I've survived it. It moves in. And then what happens, and you see this a lot, is the house of cards collapses. Maybe you catch your person you're married to is having an affair. Maybe somebody that works for you, that your key employee, steals so much money from you, you're going under. Maybe they change the laws, now your business don't work no more. Maybe the IRS is coming at you because you were a knucklehead and didn't dot all your I's and cross all your T's when it comes to them, and it doesn't take much sometimes. Maybe the house of cards you've built that has given you the illusion of security, that everything's fine here, starts to crumble. And if there's nothing to fall back on in here, man, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. We lose a lot of people because they stop doing the things that gave them the great life. You know, I've been going to this meeting detox for years. Years ago, there was a guy in there who was so funny. He was like such a knucklehead. He'd been sober 17 years, and he drank again. And he's sitting in the he wants to share because of his, he needs to enlighten the people in there that are 20 years sober. And now he's got 2 days. He wants to enlighten us. So we kind of he's one of the guys that taught us we don't let him share. It's not good. But he starts talking about his life in sobriety and how he had the big house and the wife and the three kids that adored him and the business where he's making the big money and he had two cars in the garage that were paid for. And then he says something, and he talks about how wonderful his life is. And then he says, I don't understand why I drank. As if all of that crap was a treatment for alcoholism. If you ran into a diabetic that just came out of a diabetic coma and says, I don't know why I was in a diabetic coma, I got a new car, you'd wanna slap him, wouldn't you? You'd think, what are you, a nut? What's that have to do? And it's alcoholism's the same way, right? What do you think? What are you, crazy? And yet, the alcoholic mind will grab on and think stuff like that. They just, we're knuckleheads, man. We think stuff like that. Oh, God, that's why I got to have a sponsor. Oh, man. One of the greatest, one day at a time, the saying one day at a time, really, I believe, came from page 85 when it talks about a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Where I don't know where one day at a time got turned into you just don't drink one day at a time. I don't have what it takes to do that. Unless I've developed some sort of power in my life, I'm dead meat. I will always go back to drinking. I don't, not because I'm not stupid, I'm not a bad guy. That's just what it is to have alcoholism. And so I have this daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Dr. Silkworth, in an article in the Grapevine, one of the first Grapevines, did a great thing on relapse. If you ever get a chance to read it, it's wonderful. And he, from a scientific point of view, he talked about why people drink again. It made perfect sense. He compared it to heart disease. And he said that, if you have a heart attack, it's like this 1,000-pound weight slams you in the chest and you are in a critical condition. And if you're very lucky, they take you to the hospital, they take you to the cardiac care unit, and they'll stabilize you. And then they'll give you, once you're stabilized, they will give you a program of recovery. And maybe it's no salt. Maybe it's exercise every day. Maybe it's take some blood thinners. Maybe it's cholesterol medication. Maybe it's no more cheeseburgers. And what happens, you start the exercise and the diet that they're talking about, and what happens in no time at all? Same thing happens to us that come in today and do this deal. No time at all, you're feeling better and stronger than you've ever felt in your whole life. And one night, maybe you're jogging. You're jogging 20 miles a week. You're out bowling with a bunch of guys at this bowling alley that has this reputation of having these amazing cheeseburgers, and you're bowling with these guys, and they're eating those cheeseburgers, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm in better shape than these guys. Why can't I have a cheeseburger? I'm going to have a cheeseburger. And you have a cheeseburger, you know what happens? Nothing. And that's the worst thing that could happen. And then you open the door. Next thing you know, you're compromising your exercise, and you're using salt and all that stuff, and you feel fine. And then all of a sudden, one day, 1,000-pound weight slams you in the chest. And if you're really lucky, they stabilize you and save your life, and you're back in a cardiac care unit watching Father Martin movies and stuff, and you know, or whatever the case may be, right? And it's very similar to alcoholism. We get seduced by the fruits of our own recovery into a false sense of okayness. Let's take a 8 minutes, 47-second break.